Hello, everyone. This is yours truly, Olga. To you first of the broken heart, here are a few brief words in all sincerity to assure you of my deep and heartfelt sympathy. When sorrows come to those we love, we know not what to say. Words are so inadequate our feelings to convey. None can really share our griefs, we suffer each apart. For only God can speak the word that mends a broken heart. Only he can give the peace that makes the soul resigned. Only time can bring the balm that calms the troubled mind. All that I can do is pray that you'll be given power and the strength that you will need in this, your bitter hour. Words I know can't take away the pain another bears, but I'm wanting you to know that you're in my thoughts and in my prayers.
A little girl was crying, for her room was dark and still, and she was so afraid to be alone. Understanding Nanny said, remember, if you will, that you can never, ever be alone. For the Lord once told the little sparrow, will watch over everything you do, and I am sure if he watches, little sparrow, he is bound to be watching over you. For when crowds all gather near him, he said, suffer, little children, unto me. And he told them all such lovely stories as they sat around and climbed upon his knee. It's no use looking round to see him, for you will never find him there. The only time you'll ever is when you close your eyes and say a prayer. So if you're feeling sad and lonely, and it seems all the world, and the Lord you.
How many times have you been told never to say never? In this book, The Everyday Miracles by Michael Drury, she writes rather convincingly that people set out deliberately to miss the wonder and richness of living, but it is treacherously easy to do. A postponement here, a sidestepping there, a retreat elsewhere, and behold, a life dried up behind a wall of negatives. I can't, I won't, it could never happen. Out of curiosity, I kept for a week a list of all the nevers and similar denials I heard myself and others say. It was much too long to repeat here, but some of them were these. I would never be a working mother. I'll never marry outside my religion. I can never balance my checkbook. I'm not good at figures. I never do volunteer work. I never wear pink. I won't have a washing machine in my house. I won't color my hair. I never go to big parties. I'll never marry a career woman. I'll never speak to him again. And I can't stand jazz. I know a brilliant, famous woman who has led a fascinating and rewarding life so far, as she likes to remind me. And once I asked her if she could select from her variegated years a single most important lesson learned so far. She was silent a moment and then said, "Yes, that all the things you think can never happen will happen. And all the things you think you'll never do, you will probably do." Never is a cunning thief that impoverishes the spirit. We're all born to unspecified possibilities. They are ahead of us, waiting. What starts out as a simple recognition of fact too often digs in as a practice and a principle, and the possibilities narrow and stop. To say, "I have never been to Europe," is harmless, if regrettable. But the moment it becomes, "I never go to Europe," and "I never will go," we are being robbed under our very noses. Stubbornly saying no to large and small ventures, we find ourselves in a circular trap, like two-year-old children who scream no at the world even when they mean yes. We at once defend and resent our negations until we scarcely know what we want or need. The world is wide and complicated. Without preferences and rejections, there would be no personality. Without some boundaries to give pattern to life, every minor decision would become a major crisis. Whether to come or go, whether to act or wait, whether to speak or keep still. But never? Plainly, some negatives are suitable and necessary. At a certain age, one can rightly say, "I never wear makeup," or "fancy coats." In certain circumstances, it makes sense to say, "I cannot spend more than $10 for this." But any position, no matter how wise and rust-proof at the time, may be outgrown. For life, by definition, is that which flows. It moves, it evolves, it changes. According to Webster, never means not only time but degree. When we say never fear or never mind, we do not mean indefinitely in time, but in no degree, none at all. So, in reverse, to cast off your negatives does not mean wallowing or being blown about heedlessly by every whim, but to put aside by degrees those negations that have become or always were frightened, indifferent, habitual, or suspicious. To listen, to try. It is quite possible that the fragments and segments of our lives are related in some unified way, so that the thing we say so flatly we will never do is the very thing that some other portion of us needs for completion. That is why the effort to break out of the pattern exhilarates us. It is a creative act. A negative reversed becomes a positive. If you would make yourself felt in the world and known to yourself, say yes to life. Never say never. Or perhaps it should be rarely say it.
The impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, or to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, just to right the unrightable wrong. Better far than you are to try when your arms are too weary to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far. When there's no more to give, to be willing to die so that honor and justice may live. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, then my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better by far. That one man, scorned and covered with scars, still tries with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star.
Now, a word about values. We are suspended in language, which is a swift and powerful shorthand for communicating enormous chunks of reality. And it is easy to fail in love with the shorthand, thinking that by saying the word we have invoked the reality beneath. We say the words love and expect others to swoon. We say the words truth or patriotism, and everyone is supposed to stand up tall with a glint in his eye. Value is only a word for which we invent and discover meanings, plural, more than one, for values grow as we grow, change as we change, contract only if we contract. The very atoms of our bodies, the air around us, are in perpetual, high-speed, dazzling motion. To be alive at all is to move, act, do, and become. To use a system of values as a means of holding life still is a sleepwalking state. Values by themselves are no guarantee of goodness or happiness. They can be used blindly to hide from life. Parents sometimes say they know their children will make mistakes, but please let them not be the same mistakes that they, the parents, made. And we ask why not? Such mistakes have served mankind for centuries in the growing up process. We all made more or less the same blunders in learning to walk and cried because we were hurt, but nobody argues that we ought to omit them and be carried in somebody else's arms for the rest of our lives. It is equally monstrous if the spirit never tries to walk upright and alone. I'm not suggesting, of course, that you rush out and plunge into every vagrant experience life offers. Wallowing will only blunt your sensibilities, not heighten them. I am saying that living is daring, trying, being wrong and trying again, going beyond where you were last year. But it is not anarchy. Without a present sense of values, you have no base to push off from, and you can't get somewhere from nowhere. Start with the values you now have and live by them as far as they will take you. I promise you with all my heart, the day will come when they fail, and then you will know it is time to re-examine your beliefs. Don't cheat the self that is waiting to be. To enlarge your values is wisdom. To throw them out is suicide, spiritual and sometimes physical. As a fellow human being, I urge upon you a strong sense of values, not as a formula for happiness or success, but as the only way I know to participate in what the American philosopher Ernest Hocking has called the direct tang of being, so that one day, when you look back, you will have lived and you will know it.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, had my fill, my share of losing, and now as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way. Oh no, oh no, not me, I did it my way.
For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not.
Two more gems of thought from Michael Drury's The Everyday Miracles. The first one is The Me in Me, and the second, Where the Love of Others Begin. In Enid Bagnell's searching play, The Chinese Prime Minister, the leading character, who's 70 years old, says, "There is a me in me I have not conquered yet or even found." This alludes to a deeply significant fact, that there is a self beyond the self, and for all we know, another and another, which must be satisfied if we are to live comfortably in our own skins. This is not abstract philosophy, though you can carry it to that, but brown bread reality. It is the me in me that mutters beneath the surface of our lives like an angry volcano, that asks of the right marriage, the house, the college education, the success, the children, the car, the clothes, the travel. Is that all? Is this what life is about? Life is found in movement, not in form. Art, including the art of living, is bringing order out of chaos. But the chaos has to be there as working substance, or the order becomes flat, tasteless, hollow and barren. And the only way to achieve creative chaos is through commitment. So do something, master something, care about something, and submit constantly to correction. Now, where the love of others begins. Can you imagine, she asks, Abraham Lincoln declining to run for president on the grounds of its being vainglorious? Can you imagine Sir Winston Churchill or Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt or St. Teresa or Florence Nightingale or Beethoven waiting around for somebody else to point out their paths or personalities? True, these people had particularity, but so have you, Michael Drury writes. Love of others begins in decent self-esteem. If you don't believe in your own entity, you can't very well give it to others in love, in work, in service, or anything else. All great contributions have been made by men and women who, far from effacing the self, cherished and utilized it, commanded it, trained it, freed it, enjoyed it. Yes, even the saints. Bitterness and defeat come from non-use of our powers, stifled abilities, and unrealized self. You sometimes feel you're fighting on your own, right? Grappling with your problems all alone. And it seems there's no one who will side with you or back you up in what you want to do. It's then you need to check up quietly, to look within your heart and try to see. If somehow you yourself are off the beat, have been unwise, unkind, or indiscreet, have turned a friend into an enemy, and so have lost support and sympathy. When other people's views you cannot share, it sometimes means that you are wrong somewhere. So before you speak your mind, make sure you've tried to see the picture from the other side.